Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
It's getting near dawn.
We're back. It's 12 after.
When lights close the tide.
I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I bet Joan Pryde likes that music.
Not bad.
Well, it's your buddy. It's your
yeah,
favorite
I know,
guy.
But it's a previous iteration of him.
That's when he was with Cream, I think.
Right.
Joan Pryde, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're debating Eric Clapton there, in case you didn't know what
oh,
we were doing.
Oh, there's no
there.
Debate about Eric Clapton.
Oh, was that Derek in the Dominoes? Maybe that
oh,
was,
I,
was that Eric?
I don't know.
Was that Eric or Derek? Joan, did you watch the debate last night?
I watched parts of it, yes.
Yeah? What'd you think?
Well, I agreed with the pundits afterward. I mean, there was no, you know, everybody's looking for a winner and a loser, and I don't know that there was a winner or a loser. I mean, they all both made their points.
It was a pretty good debate, wasn't it? I mean, I think it was the better of all of them in terms of it being a true kind of a debate,
other than
the fact that they can't really talk to each other.
Well, I also think, you remember years ago when they first did the debates, they'd have a panel of reporters.
Yeah.
I think it's better with the one moderator, like you saw with Lehrer and now with Schieffer, because Schieffer could say, you know, let me go back to something you said earlier, and then you could sort of bring something else out. And then he'd, you know, if one spoke and then the other, I think sometimes if, say, the president wanted to get an extra word in, he would let him. So there was a little more back and forth
right. This
year, I think, in both instances than there has been in previous years.
Well, two things that I noticed, you know, in the very first debate, Mr. Kerry never one time, other than at the 20th, to his last two-minute summary, he never one time looked at the camera. Last night, he looked at the camera a lot.
So somebody explained
that to him. But I never heard anybody say anything, you know, that I noticed that he didn't look at the camera the first night, and I thought that was a big mistake, but nobody else did apparently, but at least they didn't report that. But last night, he looked at the camera. He looked right into the living rooms of the audience. I thought he did that. Mr. Bush seemed to be better than he was in the first debate. But, you know, Joan, a lot of the punditry gave Mr. Bush a hard time because of his smirks and his scowls, and I actually like that. I like it when they scowled at each other.
Well, that's your prerogative if you
that's honest though. I mean, I think when they sit there and one of them calls the other one a piece of scum and they smile at him, I think that's unnatural.
Well, I think it, but see, the thing with the president is, you know, he is well known for not taking criticism well, and he's sort of in a little bubble there with his advisor, Yes Men, and I think he needs to get out a little more. You know, these Ask President Bush forums that he goes to don't exactly hit him with hard questions.
So
he's not used to that, the poor man.
I see. But if you watch Mr. Kerry in the first debate, he had it down pat. He had the smiling down pat. And Mr. Bush didn't. And you know, a lot of people gave Bush a hard time for that. I actually prefer the honest reaction.
Funny, because I didn't think Bush's smiling this time was so honest. It looked to me like someone had said to him, remember not to scowl.
Well,
so it looked like
did.
He was thinking to himself, okay, I'm going to put a smile on my face so I don't look like I'm scowling.
They did that, but Mr. Kerry's been doing that since day one. I mean,
yeah, but his looks more honest. His looks more natural.
Oh, I see. Chuckle. I see. Ah, the little chuckle.
Yeah. come on now. You don't really mean that, do
whatever you?
Whatever
you say, Joan.
Yeah.
So did you think Mr. Kerry won last night, Joan?
I don't think anybody won. Did you? Did you think Mr. Bush won?
You know, that's what I meant when I said I thought it was a pretty darn good little deal there. I mean, I thought it was. I didn't, you know, contrary to what some people are saying, I really on the other side of the of Mr. Bush's aisle, I think that it was a pretty good, you know, kind of a draw probably.
Yeah, I think it was sure. So now we have to go talk to Jim. Do you have anybody on the line there from among those 359 people? We got to find out how they're going
to
vote.
We've been talking to them, and you know, we have been trying to find out what they have to say. But we'll know more about that later on. Yeah, 359 undecided. That's all we have right now in the country. Joan, let's talk about the election a little bit. Let's move on down though and talk about the some of the congressional elections. You guys say, Kiplinger says that the GOP is still pretty much going to lock up the House this year.
That's right. Yeah, pretty much. The thing is, as we point out, there is a chance for the Democrats to take the House, but as we say, they would need every lucky break. In other words, you know, their safe seats would all have to go their way, and then all open seats would have to go their way. And you know, you're always talking about net pickups because mm-hmm. you have members who leave. So let's say a Democratic member leaves, then that seat is open, could be caught by a Republican. So they can't have any of that happening, and they also have to pick up all the formerly Republican seats, too. So they really have, I think it's too hard a mountain to climb.
Well, as a professor of mine, Dr. Geiser, would have said, it's about like the chances of a wax dog chasing an asbestos cat through hell.
That's one way to put it,
yeah.
Certainly.
So that's basically what you just described. They're going to have a big hill to climb. But let's talk about some of those races where the GOP and the Democrats may be able to actually pick up some gains. You guys say that the GOP, the Republicans, could actually add some seats in Congress now, not in the Senate, but in Congress in Georgia, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Florida.
And when we say in Congress, of course, we mean the House here.
Right.
What's interesting, if you look at this list where we say, you know, if your readers have this in front of them, it says, here's where the GOP could add seats.
Right.
Where are all of those states?
Right. They're all in the South.
They're in the South.
Yep.
They're
mm-hmm.
all in the South.
Mm-hmm. Now, did I say that right? The Georgia, Louisiana, South Carolina, Florida, are those pickups that you're saying in the Senate or the House?
I thought you said they were in Congress.
I think that's in the Senate, yeah. Actually, isn't it? That they may pick
yeah,
up.
Oh, I'm says, sorry. Yeah. No, in, you had said Congress. I wasn't sure what
mm-hmm.
you meant.
It's in the Senate. And so anyway, they stand to pick up. And as you say, those are in the South. And the Democrats will likely make gains in Illinois. That's in the Senate now. In Illinois, Alaska. And also Oklahoma and Colorado.
Oklahoma looks a little unusual.
Tom
there.
Coburn's,
I'm so surprised.
Tom Coburn's apparently not in a little jeopardy out there. And also Pete Coors. That's an interesting one. We have a lot of people listening in Colorado. The race is very close in Colorado, and you guys say that the Dems may pick up Colorado in the Senate side.
Right. Right. Yeah. That is an interesting. I think. Yeah, the Attorney General's been running pretty hard there, so that'll be interesting to see.
Well, isn't that, and that's the state that also on the ballot is what to do about the electoral votes.
Oh, that's Colorado. That's right.
That's right.
To apportion them rather than have mm-hmm. winner take all. Yeah,
yeah.
That's huge.
And isn't that going? That's going to be decided with the same vote. I mean, think about that. The same vote that you make about whether to who to vote for president, you're also going to be voting about how the electoral votes are to be allocated. So that could be an interesting part of the night, Joan, when on election night. Stand by, 20 after. We'll be right back with our good friend Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors.
I changed my way. It'll take time, man.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, I want to come back for a second to this thing about this Colorado thing. Now, if I understand this correctly, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think you know about this.
You know I will.
Well, they're going to be voting on the same ballot whether to have their electoral votes go all to one candidate, whoever wins the majority, or to be apportioned, as you said, in the same ballot where they vote for Bush or Kerry.
But now the vote on the electoral votes, would that affect this election, or is that for a future election?
That's what I don't know. I thought it affected this election.
All that?
So if it does, I could be wrong about that.
Well,
somebody, if you're listening,
if
you're listening in Colorado, email us that. Ask Jim at jbsba.com.
Well,
send me an email. Let me know about that.
I wonder if when we wrote about it in a previous letter, we made that clear.
I don't
remember
think,
we wrote about it.
Yeah, I remember, but yeah. I was that's where I was getting my information.
Oh no, really?
My God, oh. What am I doing? What have I done?
You're scaring me, Jim.
but if it is this election, talk about. Surely it wouldn't be, though. But anyway, if it is this election, that could make it for an interesting situation. If Mr. Kerry wins the White House, what do you think about his coattail effect?
Oh, boy, that's the $64,000 question.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, they say Americans like divided government. So, you could kind of see where this is shaping up. If Republicans really look like they're taking both houses, you could make a case for Kerry winning the White House. On the other hand, you know, you've already had you've got Republicans controlling everything this time, so that doesn't always hold up.
Well, politics, all politics are local, they say. And there is
Did
no.
Did you just make that up?
No, somebody else said that. I said they say. But the thing is that there is no national groundswell to boot anybody in particular, any party out. You know, so I don't see, even if Kerry wins the presidential election, I don't see his coattails. Actually, I don't see either one of their coattails being all that long this time. Do you?
I think coattails may be a thing of the past. You know, back in the day when you had the old-fashioned voting machine with the party lever, I don't think you have party levers anymore.
No. Yeah,
but by the way, let me just interrupt with a news bulletin here.
Okay.
The change in Colorado would take effect immediately.
I thought that it did.
And because Colorado is considered a safe GOP state, we're saying that a proportional system, if they approve it, could theoretically hurt Bush. For example, Bush could win 60% of the popular vote and only get 5 of the state's electoral votes instead of all 9 if proportional voting went through.
That would hurt him in Colorado. And I actually asked one of my GOP experts about that. And asked them, you know, what do they think about that? Was this something that the Democrats were going to try to be doing across the country to try to open up some of these locked up Republican states like Colorado has been?
They better be careful.
Well, and that's what he said. He said
they could be opening up states like New York
and California.
California.
See, that's what he said.
No, they can't do that.
He said, I hope they do.
Sure, he does.
He said, I hope they do. I hope that's one of their strategy, because then we get California, and this was the Republican saying this, then we get California, New York, et cetera, et cetera.
See, I didn't know winner take all was just a tradition. I figured it was in the Constitution, and that's why it always was that
way.
Well,
I think it's more than a tradition. It's state by state.
But that's what I mean. It's just states have all decided to do it that way.
It's a state right thing. But you're saying it may not even be in the state constitutions.
No, I'm saying I thought it was in the federal constitution because the federal constitution set up the Electoral College.
Well,
and I didn't think it was really just a coincidence that all 50 states had it the same way, but I guess it is.
Well, the reason I knew that it wasn't a federal situation is because I knew that there were a handful of states that aren't like that. Some states do apportion their I've forgotten which ones, but some states do apportion. There's a handful, I think.
Right.
Do apportion their electoral votes. They don't send all of them to whoever wins the majority.
Right. That's right.
So that would make it not a federal situation. But this is going to add a new level of drama. This Colorado thing is going to add a new level of drama to that Tuesday night, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Let's move over and talk about South Dakota. How is Mr. Daschle doing there? The former Senate leader has got some good competition there in Mr. Thune, who ran last time against the other candidate.
Well, no question that this is a very, very big race, and that's probably the one I'm watching the closest next to the president. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen. I think Thune is running pretty strong.
Yeah, I think he is. I don't know. I haven't seen the new polls on that. But now, if Daschle loses, that's a major blow to the Democrats, isn't it?
Well, I would think so. Sure, because they lose yet another seat in the Senate.
Well, but it's more than just a seat. I mean, he's one of the most vociferous partisans in Washington.
He's the minority leader.
Well, but even beyond that, I mean, there are plenty of partisans on both sides. But he really tips the scales, I think. So that would be not only a big seat loss. That would be a big. I think it would be an emotional loss for them too. So the bottom line,
it wouldn't be unexpected because the Republicans were gunning for him.
Yeah, they have been. The bottom line then, Joan, is that the GOP will dominate the House for 2 more years. The Senate will probably continue under GOP control, according to Kiplinger, but not necessarily have any big increases. And it'll be interesting. If Bush wins, then we'll have the Republican love fest, probably. If Kerry wins, then we'll have gridlock. And I don't know which I fear more. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. It's 29 after. Joan Pride is our guest. We got more to come after these messages. Stay with us.
I get a constant busy signal when I call you on the phone. I get a strong, uneasy feeling
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks for hanging around with us. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Let me remind you, folks, next week, the first 3 days, I'm going to be broadcasting live from Palm Springs, actually that area, actually La Quinta Resort. I'm going to be out there working with the folks at American Express. They've asked me to come out there and deliver a keynote to their to an organization that they part of their organization, actually the travel agents, the agency division of the American Express organization. And so I'm looking forward to being out there with them. And yes, I am taking my golf clubs. Thank you very much. But I'm looking forward to that. But I'll be with you in from Palm Springs, broadcasting live and in person Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then I'll be back to regular. After that, Joan, when you join me next time, I'll be back to regular. Notice I never use the word normal around here.
That was smart.
Joan, something that you didn't know I was going to say, but I want to say it to right now while you're here. This is Breast Cancer Month, isn't it? Breast Cancer
yes,
Awareness
it is.
Month.
That's right.
And this,
and I'm a survivor, so I sort of paid attention to that.
And we're so proud of that, Joan. And,
thank you.
And also today, not today, but tomorrow. But I wanted to say it today while you're here. Tomorrow is National Mammography Day.
Oh, very important.
And that saved your life, didn't it?
It sure did. No question about it.
Mammography saved your life. And so, ladies, please.
No, my husband pestering me and annoying me to go get a mammogram saved my
as
life.
As he is wont to do from time to time. Good for Ray for doing that. But,
yeah.
But ladies, please. Do that. A member of my family is also a survivor. The mammography saved her life. And so, you know, most of us have somebody that's not too far away from us who've gone through this. And so ladies, please heed this warning and get checked and have a regular one. They recommend it. What after 40, they recommend every other year, and after 50 every year, something like that, Joan?
I think so. And you know, if there's a history of it in your family, even if you're not 40, it's, you know, see if you can still get one.
And you know, Joan, it's my understanding that even if you don't have insurance, they're only like $150 to $200.
Yeah, I don't think they're
not
prohibitively
expensive.
They're
not prohibitively expensive. And I know for some people.
But there are also resources. You know, there's resources. Go on the internet, and I know that there are places that offer free mammograms to folks who can't afford them.
Good,
so
good.
That they're out there for you.
Well, absolutely. This is something you got to do. And correspondingly, guys, it's not Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, but correspondingly, guys, get that check, get your PSA done, and check that out. So anyway, Joan, we're glad you're a survivor, and we're glad to recognize that. And I think we wanted to try to work out an interview maybe later this month with you and a breast cancer expert. So we'll talk about that a little
bit. That
would
be great.
Let's move on, which we've done in the past, by the way. Let's talk about the economy, Joan. You guys report that September, August employment numbers were kind of misleading to Mr. Bush's detriment, but there was a reason. What happened?
Well, remember the four hurricanes that hit Florida and southern and eastern United States?
I think I remember those.
Yeah. Hard to forget, right?
Yeah.
Well, we say that those hurricanes muddied the data, and that the data will probably be revised upward, so the numbers won't look quite as bad as originally thought. Now,
but probably not before the election.
Probably not. And my guess is even if they were revised up, you know, it's really hard to tell what the electric pays attention to and what it doesn't. And I think, you know, if let's assuming they did pay attention to the job numbers, if someone came out and corrected them later on, how many people would really notice that unless
right.
the media made a big deal out of it?
Right. Only people like me who don't have a life even track these things.
No comment.
but seriously, those are things that played to the negative for Mr. Bush and the positive for Mr. Kerry, that are unfortunate. But it's one of those events, isn't it? I mean,
that's
people,
right.
Prime Minister Macmillan of England back in the last century, one of his aides says, "What's going to determine the next event, the next election, sir?" And he said, "Events, my dear boy, events." And so this is one of those events, and you just never know which way they're going to turn.
Right.
But at the same time, correspondingly, Bush may get some points in Florida for his response to the hurricane situation down there. So who
yeah,
knows?
Boy. On the other hand, if I guess they've had enough time to fix things up there, but you had people right after the hurricane saying, "You know, I'm not going to have time to vote. I'm going to be too busy getting my life back together."
Right.
So it's hard to know which way that's going to go.
It is hard to know, but I know this: more Americans are currently employed than ever before in the history of this nation, and so that can't be a good thing. Stand by, 20 till. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Here's Mickey and Sylvia to take us out.
Never wanna quit. No, no. After you've had it, you're in an awful fix.
And then the man steps right up to the microphone. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pratt is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Folks, I encourage you to check out their website, which is Kiplinger.com. And Joan, you guys publish a few things, don't you?
Certainly do.
You got this this flagship thing, what they call the Kiplinger Letter, which has been around since 1923, the year, two or three years before Joan joined them.
That's right.
And that one's the weekly publication. They have three biweeklies, the Tax, California, and Agriculture Letters. And then there's that magazine.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And it's available wherever books are sold, wherever magazines are sold, usually. And also by subscribing, which you can do at Kiplinger.com. And you guys got a phone number, too, don't you, Joan?
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And if you want, they'll give you a 30-day free trial. You can read their stuff to your little heart's content and see if you like it. And if you like it, you can continue to subscribe. If you don't, it'll cost you nothing. And I worked really hard for that, so take advantage of that. Joan, let's talk about Fannie Mae. This is a topic we don't talk about much. I typically am not all that interested in the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgage organizations, but Fannie Mae is really coming up on the radar screen, and there's some potential problems with this, isn't there?
Well, and Fannie Mae is a very, very important agency, even though we don't really tend to pay attention to it because we think, well, Fannie Mae helps poor people get mortgages. What do we need them for? And that's
right.
True, but you would be amazed the extent to which Fannie Mae's loan standards set the standard for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
When you go get a mortgage, you know, your mortgage lender always wants it to be what they call a plain vanilla mortgage. And what that means is they want to be able to sell it to Fannie Mae.
Right.
They want to be able to sell it in the secondary market. And if Fannie Mae says you have to have this in your loan agreement or that in your loan agreement, by gosh, that's going to be there.
That's right.
So Fannie Mae really sets the tone, and however, they've come under a lot of fire, as had their brother agency called Freddie Mac for mm-hmm. bad accounting procedures.
Yeah, they have. They've been overstating some things. They've been manipulating the numbers apparently to a tremendous degree, and you guys report that Congress is going to clip their wings next year. What does that mean?
Well, what we're saying is that they're going to require Fannie Mae to have higher levels of capitalization so that it wouldn't necessarily get in trouble if there was an economic downturn. Because, you know, there isn't an explicit, but there is an implied guarantee that the market believes exists, so that if Fannie Mae ever went under, the federal government would have to kind of back it up.
But, Joan, could this be something almost on the level of the SNL debacle?
That's funny. I was thinking SNL, too. I think it's theoretically
the
80s? Could be. But let's hope that, you know, the government is acting faster in this case to sort of nip this in the bud.
But there was no implied guarantee of the SNL because the government did bail that out with the $87 billion or whatever it took to bail out the SNLs when all those guys crashed. But there is no...
But they were federally guaranteed.
That's right. But the Fannie Mae is not really...
Right.
On paper, federally guaranteed. It's almost an urban myth, isn't it?
Right. Exactly.
That they'll back it up, and if they do or they don't, regardless, if Fannie Mae fails, this could really be ugly for the housing market, couldn't it?
Oh, no question about it.
So folks, you might want to start paying.
When Fannie Mae sneezes, the rest of the housing market is going to catch cold, I think.
Right. You might want to pay a little more attention to this. This is something I'm going to start looking at a little bit more, and it could affect other investments. Joan, let's move over and talk about something that you study quite a bit, and that's the tax situation. The new tax bill, as you say, as Kiplinger turns a phrase, as they are wont to do from time to time, a sleigh full of goodies to businesses. What's going on?
Boy, did it ever.
See, that's music to my ears.
Well, what happened was Congress was under pressure to replace a tax break that it had been giving to U.S. exporters. Europe had objected to this tax break and had gone to the World Trade Organization and had gotten permission to levy rather stiff tariffs against many of our goods, and that's what they've been doing to push Congress to change this. So they made that change, but you never have a small tax bill anymore. Tax bills, end up being Christmas trees, and part of the situation here was that once they repealed that break, the question became, well, what do you have to replace it with something, and what they did, but you also have to replace it with something that Europe isn't going to object to. So what they did was they replaced it with a tax break for domestic manufacturing, which amounts to the deduction that businesses will get amounts to a 3 percentage point reduction in the top corporate rate from 35% to 32%.
Right. And that'll help them to be more competitive overseas.
Right. But that's only the beginning.
This next one is beautiful. Go ahead and tell us about that.
I'm assuming you're talking about the extension through 2007 of the higher limits for expensing by small businesses.
Say
that's
that again.
Huge.
I want to just have that waft over my ears, Joe.
Okay. Small businesses will get to their higher limits on expensing for the next, 3 years?
Up to 2005. I mean, up to 105,000 now.
That's right.
I think it is. It goes up that much.
And start out 2007.
In 2003, the law increased the direct expensing annually from 25,000 to 100,000. Then it went to 102,000 this year. It's going. I'm not sure when. Up to 105, I think, maybe 110. I've forgotten, but up even a little bit more. That's not the big deal. The big deal is that they extended it when it was going to expire. I think next year, Joan, but they extended it through 2007. And I just love the sound of that ring.
I knew you would.
Yes. It's beautiful. It's really helping companies. There are small business owners, and even, Joan, the financial gurus who spin more to the left have said that this type of tax break has helped the economy, has helped to pull the economy out of a recession.
Right.
So that's good news. We got more to come. We got more information that Joan Pride is going to share with us right after these messages. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. Back, it's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for being part of our day. It's my pleasure, as always, to be part of yours. Sean Doyle is going to be with us coming up in the show straight ahead. Steve Martin, our Profit Pro, is going to be with us.
And Steve Martin?
Steve Martin. He's not quite as wild and crazy a guy as the one you're thinking of, but he's pretty crazy.
Okay.
He's pretty crazy. And then Governor Pete DuPont's going to be with us. I'm looking forward to getting him back on the show. He's a good guy and a friend, and we'll be talking to him coming up in the show straight ahead. Joan, let's talk about OSHA regs. What's going on with some of the new stuff at OSHA?
Well, I'm beginning to get discouraged about this because this issue has been kicking around since I was covering labor for Kiplinger back in 1998, but they still haven't put it to rest. This is a question of who pays for safety gear of workers.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it has not been clear what kinds of safety gear employer is required to pay for, so OSHA is taking another crack at this. And what they're saying is that, most of the stuff has to be provided by employers, but employees will have to supply some of the what they call personal gear themselves, like,
right,
say, boots,
right,
that only fit, a boot doesn't just fit anybody. It has to be fitted right to you.
Right. But now, one thing about that gear, though, it is deductible. You can deduct it on your personal income tax, is my understanding.
But only if you itemize.
Right. That's true. Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But I have a friend who used to have a, he was the plant engineer. So he never, you know, he never had to go out in the, I mean, he went out in the plant, but he didn't wear gear like a lot of the guys did. But he would buy dress shoes with steel toes in it just so, and he wore those all the time just so he could deduct it. So you could never step on his feet. That's going to be something that's coming down the pike. And a determination of that. That's one of the things that OSHA is working on these days. What about the comp time issue for overtime, Joan? What's up with that?
Well, you know, this has gone back and forth and back and forth because I had thought that that was getting close to being settled to allow firms to substitute comp time for overtime pay. But as it turns out, labor unions were strong enough to keep that from happening. So that isn't going to happen this
year. I thought the comp time thing was settled with the overtime law.
I thought so, too.
So apparently it's not, though, huh? That's a confusing thing to me, that overtime thing. You know, I'm a reasonably intelligent guy, and I'm having a hard time figuring that one out. And so I'm sure there's some other people who are too.
Sure.
Joan, what about the flu vaccines? You know, that came up in the debate last night. I was surprised.
Oh, I missed that
Schaefer,
part.
Schaefer asked Mr. Bush,
We
have half as many flu shots as we need. You know, what are you doing about it, or why is that happening? And Mr. Bush said, I'm not going to take a flu shot this year. And I'm encouraging healthy people who are not in the risk categories to not get a flu shot this year.
That's it?
That was his answer. Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
And I didn't hear anybody complain about that. I mean, he said we relied on a company in England to make the flu vaccines, and he said their vaccines were tainted, and so we weren't able to use those.
Well, it sounds like from this item here that we're going to try to get more companies to make the vaccine so that we don't have all our eggs in one basket in
right.
the future. But, I mean, this isn't going to happen overnight. That's the problem.
Right. Joan, another thing you guys report on is that there's a new Iraqi weapons report. Is it the Delfer? Am I pronouncing that right? The Delfer report? Is that the one that you're talking about on the Iraqi weapons plan that Saddam had?
Right.
And you guys say that report, which I'll get you to tell us about in a second, is probably not going to change many votes.
Well, no, because I think, you know, people, I think, had already decided whether they believed that whether or not Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And this report basically just says that the evidence was not overwhelming and did not really, should not have led to that conclusion, but that I guess the president was not as well served by his intelligence community as he should have been.
Didn't that report also point out, though, that Saddam could have converted, he could have gone back to making weapons in a very short period of time if he'd wanted to?
Well, I don't know if the report said that. It may have, and I didn't pick that up. I know it said that he really wanted to, and
yeah.
that he did intend to.
Very badly.
You know, whether he had the means to move that quickly, I'm not sure.
Well, something that you guys aren't talking about this week that I'd like to encourage people to keep watching. I've been encouraging people to do this now for months, and that is watch the oil for food scandal issue, folks. This is a global, an international scandal of proportions like nobody has ever seen before, unfolding from our very eyes. And I encourage you guys to check that. I'm sure, Joan, you guys will be reporting on it as time goes on. Thank you for being here, Joan. Good job today. And
thank you, Jim.
And I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
Sounds great.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She'll be back. I got to go. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And I want you to remember, today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blassingame, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.